Okay. You asked the question last week.
Yes, about Ochelim Tashmishei Mitzvah, and
right.
I could not find an answer.
Well, I did.
Okay.
So you didn't work hard enough.
In
other words, we're in the middle of the sugya of Tashmishei Mitzvah Mizrakin, Tashmishei Kedushin Nignazin.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What has to go into the Geniza, and what can be merely thrown away? So Tashmishei Mitzvah, Apostle Talis, a broken chauffeur, a lulav, an esrig, a kiddush, any of these things, in theory, mikar din can be thrown away. The Ramo says, however, it's not proper just to throw it out in the regular garbage. You should do it in a more respectable way. So, and I compare this to how we're careful with Kedusha Shvius. You don't just throw Kedusha Shvius away in the regular trash. You have a special pach for it. You haven't been here for Shemitah yet. So you have, what are we, 4 more years? Where are we? Yeah,
that's
4 more years. It's always coming up. You know, and you wrap it up. You don't just throw it away with the regular stuff. And then the Ramo says, and really, if you want to be machmir, you should put it in Geniza. Now that, I don't know anybody that's makbid to put every Tashmishei Mitzvah in the Geniza.
Today it's more common, because it's easy to do. You know, it's like, you know, grab it aside. I mean, I don't think people do love him in the Geniza, or anything else, they might just do it.
I mean, you don't see people putting love and nesrogim in the Geniza. You don't see people putting kiddush cups in the Geniza. You don't see people putting. But I don't know. Okay, ain't no devar sof with the chumras. But then I mentioned the problem of, well, what about the schach? So in a certain things we have this minog. For certain things, this minog developed of kevan das David bo mitzvah chada taseh bo mitzvah achrina. In other words, you're a posel lulav, we save it and we use it to kindle the fires for the Biur Chametz. The tzitzis strings we repurpose as bookmarks and a few other.
That's a nice thing.
Etrog for Besamim. It's a nice thing to do, but it's a way of. What?
It's not
Mikra Din, but the Mishnah Berurah does bring this idea of this idea that since you've done one mitzvah with it, try to piggyback and get another. Now, obviously, these things are. None of these things are mitzvot proper. Right? There's no mitzvah to have a bookmark. But since people do have bookmarks and you put it in your, right? In other words, you know, the art scroll should just put a.
Collect old tzitzis.
Old tzitzis. It would be nice.
As my, I should say mitzvah, not a mitzvah.
Yes, right.
It's an inyan.
Yeah, so it's an inyan to since it's a mitzvah, it's a mitzvah object, you can repurpose it for a light mitzvah. But then I said, obviously, there are certain things. This the kapot marim. So what do you do? You can't. I thought like, this will be a get rich quick scheme. Next year I'll sell. I'll like have these giant Ziploc bag size Ziploc bag manufactured. Right, and on it, like you can write Tashmishei, you can put the sif the simon, the sif cotton from the Mishnah Berurah, right?
You can use the ones the Kohanim use in the plains.
Yes, right. They have such a thing, right? Big Ziploc bag, you know. You can decorate it with like, you know, like those Ushbizen signs, like from the sukkah, and you can put your kapot tamarim in them, and you can make them in two sizes, like one regular size and one extra large for the people that are like have extra large, you know, for Hidur Mitzvah have extra large kapot tamarim, and then you can put it out by the trash so that you're not merely throwing it out, you know, on the curb when they come and they pick up the, okay, so
you're giving credence to the saying which I once heard, behind every new chumrah is a business.
There's a business, right? Well, but you have to be careful of what you wish for, because, you know, our neighbor Moshe Kapel and Purim used to make up his Pashkevilim with crazy chumras. Like, it's also to drink water because the water has bugs in it. And then, sure enough, wouldn't you know
that.
Only after he did it.
Only
himself.
After he did it.
So, David asked a question of, well, what about things that, in principle, are Tashmishei Mitzvah, because you do it, you perform a mitzvah with them, like the wine in the Kiddush cup, like the leftover matzahs from the seder. Now, you buy a box of matzah. The matzah in the box is not tashmishei mitzvah. It's matzah. But you take three of those matzahs, you put them on the seder plate for matzah's mitzvah.
They become
tashmishei mitzvah. You say a birchas mitzvah over them. So if there's, I mean, usually there's not leftovers, but if there's leftovers from the matzah's mitzvah, I'm not sure that leftover challah from the lechem mishnah is right. There's the challah that
you
eat.
You could go one step further and say anything left over from the meal.
I think that's really stretching it. The challah that you eat, there's a chiyuv to eat challah. With the challah that you eat, you makayim the din of Suda Shabbos. But the challah you don't eat, I don't think that becomes a heftza shell. But the ayin in the kos, over which you say the kiddush, and the matzah mitzvah that you say the brachos on, and presumably there's
wine for like shana rocha. I'm sure that never gets finished.
Right. So any wine for a kos, for a kos shel bracha, right? Havdalah, sheva brachos, birchos. Birchas Erusin and the Chuppah, whatever it is. That's another thing. Nobody finishes that.
So. In the old days, everybody used to pour it back into the bottle.
Right. So what about that? So, I mean, we don't hear about people being machmir with this. But sure enough, if you look hard enough...
You didn't look at the Tashmishei Mitzvah Hilchata.
Yes, right. Somebody has to write that. Tashmishei Mitzvah Hilchata. So in the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, the beginning of the second volume of the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, Perik Mem Gimel, Sif Mem Dalet, he brings another example. He does not address our case specifically. But it's parallel enough that presumably this is true. What about the wax drippings from the Shabbos candles? Now, nowadays, they don't really have this, because the candles are made in such a way that they don't drip all over the place. But I remember when I was a... There are candles that drip?
Havdalah candles
drip.
Again, candles, if there's wind, they'll drip also.
Yeah, Havdalah candles, I'm not sure that the Havdalah candle itself is... Tashmishei mitzvah. You could argue about it, wax candles when you're for Shabbos, sometimes they drip and the wax. Yeah, that's why there's like those aluminum cups that go underneath to catch all the wax drippings. So what about that wax? So the Shmir Shabbos says ner sha'ava o paraffin o ner shemen shekava. If you have a wax candle, a paraffin candle, or an oil lamp, and the candle goes out, and you're left with oil in the cup, or you're left with a half burned out candle. This is not connected to the problems on Hanukkah. Hanukkah has its own dinim. I'm going to leave those aside. That has nothing to do with Tashmishei Mitzvah Nizrikin. That has to do with the din of Hana'ah on Hanukkah candles. Correct, but by Hanukkah there are other issues. So he says anything that's left over from the candles, mutar lishtamesh ba'oto aner o b'motar hashemen lachar Shabbat. You can light that leftover candle on Motzei Shabbat. Why would you light the leftover candle on Motzei Shabbat? No, because you have to. Because you just like you have to have lights.
Okay,
right? You always light a candle on Motzei Shabbat, just like you always light a candle on Sunday night, on a Monday night, on a Tuesday night, because you don't want to sit in the dark, right? So this candle, the candle that you lit on Shabbat, so don't think that it's now usher to use it for chol, which would be true for Hanukkah, right? Vafilu kava toch zman chiyuvo. And it's even if it blew out right away after she lights candles, so that she wasn't mekayim. You could say, look, how long do the Shabbos candles have to burn? Right? Until, like, you get into the meal. That's the point of Shabbos candles. You shouldn't be eating in the dark. There's a problem with our Shabbos candles because we don't eat it in the dark.
It happened to us once. We never do early Shabbat, and the kids were still in the States. We flew back without the kids, and we were totally jet lagged. We did early Shabbat because we were so tired, but we not paying attention. We forgot to, because in the early Shabbat, it was still light out.
You forgot to light candles?
No, we forgot to turn the clock on.
Ah.
And we had the lights weren't on because it was during the day, and suddenly we were like, we lit candles, and we ate our Shabbat meal by Shabbat candles.
When we were first married, we had, I had a friend who was a bit older than me, who I had observed this in his house. When we were first married, we used to eat Friday night by candlelight all the time. And then we would have the Shabbat clock go on later, right? So that you could wash up and clean up and whatever it is with some light on. But we used to eat by the candlelight of the Shabbos candles on Friday night. It was very nice and romantic and relaxing, whatever. Once we had kids, it was a little more difficult to do. We stopped doing it. Now we'll once again not have kids.
Reinstitute.
No, we can't because we'll be so blind we won't be able to see our way around in the dark. So, but in Achinami, you really should get some hano'ah from the Shabbos candles.
No, it's not
and there are poskim that say that when she lights the Shabbos candles, what she should do is she should either put on the incandescent light. Now, I don't know about these LED lights. You know, there are always discussions about incandescent lights, you know, where you have the coil that heats up. So that's, you know, close enough to fire that we say you could be yotze b'di'evid. You can't say a bracha on it. But let's say you're someplace and you have no Shabbos candles. So you turn on the incandescent lights, and you have in mind that we don't allow you to say a bracha on it because we're machmir about brachot.
Well, there's some common rabbi who daf to make Abdallah on those candles.
Yes, yes, yes. And when electric lighting became an issue, there were no end of the question of electricity in general and electric lights in specific. There were a series of very good articles in the RJJ Journal about electricity and halacha. What is the issur of using electricity on Shabbos? All of the poskim agreed. You know, in the end of the 19th century, all of the poskim agreed that electricity was usur on Shabbos. But nobody agreed on why.
The real question was Yom Tov.
And Yom Tov was right. There was the nafkah for lights. Yeah.
It was Eish. Like the Aruch HaShulchan said it was Eish.
Right.
And I know that, like, my Detroit, he said Detroit in the 60s.
People
used to. They would still turn lights on.
So that has gone out of fashion.
Now with LEDs.
So LEDs, I haven't yet. I'm sure that it's been discussed, but I haven't seen what's the halachot of LEDs and how they work.
My brother-in-law's neighbor was a descendant of a
chief. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I mean, you can imagine a parallel universe in which halacha develops that use of electricity on Shabbos is not usur.
There was a discussion.
Yes, but that's not the way. That's not the way the ball bounced in our world.
On a sociological level, something's better.
Absolutely, absolutely. Shabbos would be unrecognizable to us. It would be unrecognizable to us without.
Shabbos is still probably unrecognizable to Jews 1,000 years ago.
Yechaliot.
But I think it means it would be indistinguishable, not for us from then, but it would be indistinguishable from the weekend, to a large degree.
Which probably
I think is not.
Certainly, insofar as we don't do many. As the main malacha that we refrain from is use of electronics. Few of us plant and sow and reap, and, you know, there are toledot that are connected, but. Anyway, how do we get onto this?
About the wax.
So there's some postgame that think that you should turn off the electric lights in the dining room or wherever you light your Shabbos candles, so that when she lights the candles, I used to do this and somehow it fell by the wayside with all the rushing around for Shabbos. When she lights the candles are actually mosif or, they would discernibly add something in a dark room, and then before you run out to shul, you turn on the electric lights. Yeah, but it's already by that point at candle lighting, 18 minutes before sunset.
Well, even if it was light time, even lighting candles
right.
is not mosif.
You're always, but no,
there's
the idea that
you have to do before anyway. Imagine the idea.
The idea is that, in other words, the idea being that when she lights it, it's in a position. Anyways, there are such chumras. Then he goes on to say, "She'ava hamitaftefet min haner, harehi muktze b'shabbat." Right? Uvi yom tov v'asur letaltala. Aval acharet seit hayom, mutar lezrok et ha'sha'ava la'ashpa, ki ein ba kol kedusha. The leftover shava, the leftover. If there's a little oil left in the cup, or the we always use olive oil, but you see, you know, you have like the little metal stand that goes in the cup with the wick. So you always have to like pull that wick out. However, some are stringent. Meaning, like the first opinion in the Ramo, that the Sha'va is Tashmishei Mitzvah Nizrakin, but Yesh Machmirim to not throw it away in a disrespectful manner. Well, it's the second volume. There's only one edition.
Second volume is only one.
Right? So in the notes, he mentions, Shamati Megan Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Shlita, before he passed away, V'lo dam yelaha deshani hacha, debener hadaluk atzmo gamkein ein bo kol kedusha, What is the point of the candle? Why does the candle not have kedusha? Why is the candle not really tashmishe mitzvah? Right, and it's the light which is the object, as it were.
Was the same thing applied to food?
Hold on a second. Avalosha neru kadosh ve'araya demutar lasot kol tashmish af shel chol keneged haner shehudlak lechvod Shabbat. There are no restrictions, unlike the Hanukkah candles. Hanukkah candles are there just to be lit and not to, right? Ve'en lanu reshut lehishtamesh b'hem ela lirotam bilvad kedei lehodot u'lehalel. Right? And that's why we do what? Have the shamish. Right, to add in a little bit, so that if you get some hano out of it, the light has a little bit of something you could get hano. That's the shemash. And then he mentions also here va'ayin. Right, when he says that there's some of that machmir to, you know, when you take the wicks out of the candle, you wrap them up in a tissue. You don't just throw them out with the eggshells. Va'ayin bekafachayim.
Is a minig also to save those and use them
for what?
Burning chametz for Pesach.
Oh, really? You save those?
Yeah, I don't
those
even remember
oily, those oily wicks all year long. Don't they? You
know, it's not worse than selling. It's not. I don't know.
The oil doesn't go rancid.
No. Olive oil doesn't go rancid.
It doesn't.
Well, I wouldn't eat it, but
I guess the amount. We
hang it from the lulav, which we used to burn Pesach.
You do?
Pesach, yeah.
You save all those wicks all year long?
Not all of them. They go into a little bag.
No.
Leave it with the lulav.
Okay.
No,
it's plain in Hagen. So, if lo yizrakenu lashpa. Ela yetznio. Anything that you said abracha over, you should...
Not including food?
No,
including
food. No, presumably not Birkat HaMitzvah. Birkat HaMitzvah, right? Birkat HaMitzvah turns it into a mitzvah object. Right? Not Birkat, obviously not Birkat HaNen. Right? V'sikenu derech kavod. So does anything you say Birkat HaMitzvah over, you should be machmir, not to throw away in a bizyona dika fashion. You should be careful to wrap it up to whatever it is. V'sikenu derech kavod. Vayin gam b'matei Ephraim, who says something similar. He mentions here in the Kafachai. Here's the Kafachai. This is what the Kafachai. V'katav b'sefer Torah lishma ha'hadas shel Shabbat. Ma'ze hadas shel Shabbat? The b'samim. Which b'samim?
Friday night.
Maybe even the Friday night b'samim. You know, there are people that do this. There are people that take b'samim on Friday night. Yeah, I do it. I picked it up from Rabbi Riskin. Rabbi Riskin does it.
What do you do b'samim Friday night?
After Kiddush, we say b'samim. But the b'samim that we smell, we have two different b'samims, is from the hadas from last year's lulav, which we usually mix in with other b'samim because after a while it stops smelling. This is an idea based upon the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Lama Gimel, the famous Gemara about Shimon Bar Yochai. When they come out of the cave, Shimon Bar Yochai and his son, when they come out of the cave the second time, They see, you know, the first time they come out, what happens? They start burning up the world.
And the world burns up.
The second time they come out, they see a Jew going home for Shabbos, and he's carrying two hadassim, lechvot Shabbat. And he didn't bring roses to his wife, he brought hadassim to his wife. And why two? One for Zachor and one for Shamor. And Eliezer Bar Shimon Bar Yochai says, oh, you see how Chavivin HaMitzvot are to the Jews? We can live here. And they don't burn them up. So there's this minhag on Friday night to smell hadassim. Dafka, the hadassim. Again, it's another case of the Kevan David Bar Mitzvah Chad HaTazeh Bar Mitzvah Achrina. Right? Since you did the mitzvah with hadassim, you'd use them for the besamim. Or maybe it's the besamim for the regular, there's a problem with taking besamim for Ashkenazim. There's a problem, Yashkenazim? Yeah. There's a problem with taking besamim with hadassim for Motzei Shabbos for Havdalah.
Because
it's not clear which bracha to make. In other words, if you smell hadassim, you say berei atzei besamim. Mm-hmm. You know, there's all different. In other words, Borei Minei B'Samim is like the Shakol Nia B'Dvero for all of the B'Samim. So it's not clear if the bracha for Motzei Shabbat for as part of Havdalah should be Borei Minei B'Samim, in which case you should use other types of B'Samim. Or, and it's, if you take the Hadassim, mm-hmm. whether you should Dafka say Borei Atzei B'Samim, or whether you should use the more generic Borei Minei B'Samim, since it's a machlokas, it's a suffix. I mean, you're yotze if you say brei minei v'samim b'diavad, just like you're yotze shakol and everything. So because of this, some people are machmir not to do a hadassim, or to take hadassim together with some other. Because if you have hadassim and you have cloves, so then certainly you would say brei minei v'samim because it covers all of them. All right, but anyway, but the hadassim that for whichever b'samim you're using on Shabbos. So the Kaf HaChaim brings this idea that the Hadas Shel Shabbat lo yizrekenu achar Motzei Shabbat. You shouldn't throw it away on Saturday night. Sheyeh im hazevel la'ashpa. Right there in the garbage with all the other junk. Ela yatzni'enu ad sheyit yabesh v'inichenu b'hasakat ha'tanur shel lachmei Shabbat. Right, and as you'd have to heat up the oven to cook the challahs on Friday, so you would save the hadassim twigs until they dry out and have no more smell, and then you would use them as the kindling for next week's challah bake.
Sustainability.
V'nireh ki kein yesh li zaher b'chol davar sh'naseh bo mitzvah o shebirei chalav shelo yizrekenu l'ashpa. Derech kavod.
So anyway, if somebody actually does all of these things, it's just really wrapping themselves up in a world of kedusha. They're trying to put kedusha into the world where it might otherwise be ignored or not be.
Maybe I don't know if it's kedusha or if it's. I mean, that's an interesting question. What is kedusha? I'm not sure it's kedusha. I mean, it's kedusha in a generic sense, but it's in the sense of kavod. Well, you're living in a world of
taking something that's very, very ordinary, you know, which you wouldn't normally think to attract.
You mean like garbage?
Yeah.
Yes, that halacha. You know, we always give the example that halacha is everywhere, from the boardroom to the bedroom to how you tie your shoelaces. Those are always the examples that are given of the expense of halacha. No. Halacha's right there in your garbage can. Right. Somebody told me that once said, I don't think they were speaking about the smells, but they were talking that they were aware of somebody who had two garbage cans for milchiks and fleishiks. Why would you need two garbage cans for milchiks and fleishiks?
If you're putting in hot stuff, so then you have a good.
Yeah, even if you're not putting in hot stuff. Most people don't put in Yad Saletta's boat chicken soup into the garbage can. But there's a halacha.
Really good bags you could.
There's a halacha of kovush kimivushal. In other words, there are three isurim of basar b'chalav. You can't eat it, you can't cook it, and you can't get hanah from it. So if you're throwing it in the garbage, obviously you're neither eating it nor are you getting any hanah from it.
That's debatable.
Why? What hanah do you get from throwing something away? Throwing it away is the absolute definition of not. You're being mafkid.
Can anyone get an offer? I don't know. But like, you know, I don't know. I mean, like, you know, if you had the composting, if you had like,
you don't compost meat or milk.
But that would be butel berov.
You know, and you don't compost meat and milk. You compost vegetables.
Even if you did, you weren't getting hanah because you're composting meat and milk.
Right. Okay. But we say, obviously, you're not cooking these things together in your garbage can. But we do say, kavush kimavushal. Pickling something is halachically equivalent to cooking it. Okay. What's the definition of pickling something? Taking a, well, in other words, a pickle. How do you make a pickle? You take a cucumber, you put it in vinegar or in salt water, and you let it sit. Halachically speaking, how long does something have to sit before it's considered pickled? For the purpose, kavush, for the purpose of halacha, 24 hours. So if you, this happens every morning. My kids, they take the bowl of cereal, right? They got the flakes, they got the Cheerios. There's always like a pint of milk left in that bowl when they're done. And they take it, they throw it right in the garbage, right? So at the bottom of the garbage can, there's a pool of milk. Then you take a hot dog, you throw the hot dog in. If it sits there 24 hours, it's kavush.
Where's the salt and vinegar?
It doesn't have to be salt or vinegar. Any liquid aside from water is.
If you put meat and milk in a container for 24 hours, you'll like create poison. You
chaliot. But halachically speaking, this is a form of cooking because in the milk there's acid in the milk, there's whatever it is that affects the taste of the meat. In other words, if you have a hot dog, a cold hot dog, that falls into a bit of milk sprinkles on it. What's the halacha? No, it's not. But you
clean it off.
You wash it off. You can eat that too.
If you don't call it pickling, you call it marinating.
Marinate, yes.
If you marinate,
right. Well, that's kavush is not technically pickling. Right. It's a sense of marinating.
I'm sure you can find a recipe for putting meat and marinated in the milk thing. I'm sure there's something.
When I was a kid, when I was a kid, we didn't keep kosher.
So wait a minute. So when are you over? After the 24 hours?
After the 24 hours, yeah. So yeah, I mean, assuming you're not taking the garbage out.
But if you take the garbage out in the following morning, then
I don't know.
Theoretically, it's still sitting.
Anyway, this is a real chumrah.
It's not mine anymore.
This idea that somebody has two garbages is a real chumrah. But I brought this as an illustration of the idea that the halakha is even concerned about our garbage.
Right, but since you...
I'm not advocating this.
But you went into an explanation of why it might be perfectly logical thing to do, since we're not allowed to cook, and that's a form of cooking. But obviously, that isn't how we hold.
Yeah.
Why not?
So what do you recommend about the doctor of wine?
You really did.
Ah, so wait a second.
I was going home to buy my second garbage bag.
Because it's not... I mean, it's not for sure that the meat is going to go into the milk.
There are shalom bias issues.
I'm not a kumra. But now you have to tear down the case.
Garbage cans with different hashkachot, you know.
Yes, that's true.
Now you have to tear it down. You built up this perfect case.
I don't know. And there are, in fact, the minag pashut, the simple halacha, is that we do not treat these things as if they're, first of all, because mi'ikar adin, tashmishe mitzvah, l'chol adayos atalis is a tashmishe mitzvah, right? And mi'ikar adin, you'll have to throw it in the garbage. The Ramos says it's proper not to do that, to treat it a little more respect. But the minhag pashut is that these other things, the wax from the candle, the leftover, while you're done with the kiddush, there's some wine left over in the cup, right? Mikar did people throw it down the drain, right? However, there are poskim who generally addressing this topic, but they're almost always since the example, the classic example is the leftover wax. They're talking about that. I didn't find anybody that addresses the specific topic of the wine. But if you extrapolate from the case of the wax, the wine that you say kiddush over, the matzahs that you say birkas mitzvah over, are not less.
Right, but the examples you gave are, say, you know, the either the Shmash Rav said you should, you could, and the Kaplan said also, like,
that anything you make a bracha on, so.
Yeah, so, and as, again, the Kafa Chaim is a minority opinion, right? The Machmir opinion here is a minority opinion, and the Minhag HaPashut is not to, the Minhag HaPashut is to be lenient about these things, but one that wants to be Machmir, one that wants to be Machmir, and the truth is that I really, not because of this, but because of my own kind of istinous tendencies, on Saturday night when I take the wick support, I on the counter, I put down a paper towel, I bring all the cups, we have seven, we light, you know, two big candles and five little candles, so I take them and I usually take a toothpick to knock out the things, and I put the stuff in the dishwasher, right, and then I wrap up the, and as de facto, I've always been doing this, not because of the chumrah of the Kaf HaChaim, but because I have a little bit of an istinous and I don't want like the oily things. Oh yes, no, it's OCD is right. Well, OC is not Or HaChaim, it's obsessive compulsive. So that's some of the dinim of that in response to David's question. But if one wanted to take on a chumrah, if you're looking to take on a chumrah, you know, it could be, but, you know, but really, the truth is, for different reasons, not for the matzah, but for the wine, for Kiddush, ideally, there's a chumrah to drink the whole cup, right? And you should drink at least rov kos, but ideally you should drink the whole kos, or the whole kos should be drunk. But that's not always possible. But if you want to take on a chumrah, so be careful to drink the whole cup and not to leave over.
Well, certainly because that halacha becomes much relevant during Shmita.
It's a different halacha comes into force. That there, the Shemitah wine can't be. Yeah, that's not just the chumrah.
No, I'm saying you could dispose of it in the proper way, but you probably would be more makpid anyway to finish the cup.
Can you dispose it?
If you can't drink it. Whenever Kedusha Shviyas plays, there's always.
Drink.
I guess, but there's always leftovers. There's always something that has to go into the, you know, they have this Shemitah Pach, where you put the food in there until it's no longer edible, and you, right, you leave the wine out overnight, uncovered. It's
probably. Now you're getting into a different issue.
A day or two. No, not because of the snake poison. So, here, look at this. This is from the Eretz HaTzvi, which is Rabbi Herschel Schechter's, one of his books of Kiddushei Torah. You see here, on there are four pages, Daf Pei Tet. Well, we'll go back a bit. You see, Sif Bet, the bottom right-hand corner, Hagdarat Inyan Mikdash Ma'at. In what way we say that the kedusha of a synagogue is called a mikdash ma'at, a miniature mikdash. That the Beit HaKnesset is somehow in place of the Beit HaMikdash. So he says regarding this matter of the mikdash ma'at, shamati mechvod Marenu Rabbeinu Hagon Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik Shlita. Understand this book was written before 1994. No, not 1994, 1993. Oh, this is the 25th. This Pesach is the 25th year. The purpose of the Mishkan, the purpose of the Mikdash, was to have a meeting place between us and the Divine. V'inyan ze mitkayim bein bebeit ha-mikdash, bein bebeit ha-knesset. And that's true even in the synagogue as well. Ela shehevdel shebeinayim hu shebeit hamikdash hu beit Hashem. Veshama anachnu mivakrim etzlo lihivaed ito yitbarach. The Beit HaMikdash is God's house. We go there to visit Him. Vilu Beit HaKnesset hu beitenu. But the synagogue is our house. Hashem Yitbarech Mevaker Etzleinu B'chdei Lihva'ir Itanu. And in the synagogue, God is our guest. It's the opposite.
Have we discussed this before? Maybe not.
Well, it's with, an idea.
With like Minyan, I think we didn't discuss this.
With Minyan?
I thought we discussed this some concept. We talked about something earlier in the Gila. We were talking about things for Minyan or something about how.
I don't know. I don't know about that. But this is an idea, this chiluk, that the temple is where we go to visit God, and the synagogue is where God comes to visit us, which sounds like a nice little, like a vort. But the Rav used it in a number of halachic contexts to explain a variety of halachot in Hilchot Beit HaKnesset. You know, for example, there's a din called kapandaria, that you're not allowed to take a shortcut. There's a din, if you need to get from one spot on Har HaBayit to the other, and the shortcut means to walk across Har HaBayit, you can't do that. You can't treat, you know, like there are buildings in New York, like there's like a website that lists them, right? I was just in Leipzig a few months ago, and in Leipzig they had this thing called passage, right? These old, you know, like the city blocks, you know, like were basically large courts with, like, you know, on the outside, you know, these storefronts and entrances to buildings. But if you go into like one of these gateways in the middle of the block, you get into this warren of intersecting courtyards, and you can get through one to the other, and it'll say, like, on the gateway in the middle of a block, it'll say passage to, you know, wherever in German, right? And you know that you can take this shortcut to get through, you know, like in Clue, you know, like there are these secret passageways, right? So that's not kavod. You can't use Makom HaMikdash as a shortcut to get from here to there. So that's also a din in Beit Knesset.
The same din in the shul, yeah.
The same din in a shul, right? So if, let's say you're here in the lobby. Now, I'm not sure that it applies to the entire synagogue building. I hope not, because you know all of the people that go to... They used to go to Zemer HaZayit, used to cut through the lobby. So I presume this doesn't apply to the lobby, because we use the lobby for all types of things. But now that our shul has this, you know, it used to just be one way in, one way out. It wasn't relevant in our synagogue, right? But now that we have that other exit in the front, right? So Shabbos, like, sometimes there's like a kiddush, and the kiddush is here in the lobby, and you want to leave the building, but it's very crowded over here by the door. So you'll just cut into the shul and you'll go out the front door. That's this din of kapandaria, of taking a shortcut. You can't do that.
Right?
One of the ways around it is not to use it as a shortcut. And it's if you go into the synagogue and you spend a moment in the synagogue participating in some form of worship or Torah study, so then that is a... So you go and you sit down, you say, Ashrei Yoshvei Beitecha, Od Yalu Chasela. You said a posuk, right. you, which is a minimum form of Talmud Torah. That is a kind of workaround to get your way out of the din of kapandaria.
I stay at the Boston Rabbis in Brookline, and I stay like above the shul, where the places where they have, like, you know, people transit to stay, and I stayed there. Yeah. But the only way out was through the shul.
Through the shul.
And I learned that, and like, right. Every single time I walked in and out, I had to.
So that's a din of kapandaria. Why do we take this halacha from the mikdash and put it in the Beit Knesset? Not every din of kavod Beit HaMikdash applies in Beit Knesset. You weren't allowed to walk around Beit HaMikdash with shoes on. It was considered disrespectful. Right? That is not a halacha that we apply in the synagogue.
You weren't allowed to sit.
You weren't allowed to sit. Why is that not a halacha that we apply in the synagogue? We don't cut and paste all of the dinim of kavod Beit HaMikdash to kavod Beit HaKnesset. Right? What becomes the parameters for kavod Beit HaKnesset? What's normal in our own homes. Because Beit HaKnesset is our own. This is how the Rav explains it. He says, you see how Beit HaKnesset is our home. Right? You wouldn't let people do kapandaria through your house if your house was a shortcut to get from one place to another. You wouldn't let all your neighbors come traipsing through.
If they say a pasuk, it's okay.
Right? So shoes, right? People, it's normal for people to wear shoes. I mean, there are some, like, crazy... I had a friend when I was a kid.
Take shoes off first.
Carefully.
There are people.
Right? So, but normally speaking, if somebody comes to your home, you force every single person to take their shoes off? In Russia, they did this. In Russia, yeah. In Russia. So, but normally if your shoes are clean, you're not forced to take your shoes. When I was a kid, I had a friend who had, they also had the plastic slip covers, the whole thing. So, so the Rav said, however, so we don't require you to take your shoes off if you come into synagogue. And then it becomes the opposite. Since generally speaking, the laws of how you're supposed to dress when you pray have something to do with what normal mechubad wear is. You go to your office, in most offices, I mean, if you work for Google, anything goes. But in most places of work, you work in the bank, you're not allowed to walk around barefoot. Right? You work in a law office, you're not allowed to walk around with sandalim without socks on. You're not even allowed to walk around with sandalim on. Right? Whether it's just the kind of norm or whether there's an actual literal dress code. Right? So in Beit Knesset, it's not only that you're not forbidden to wear shoes, it becomes the opposite. You become, basically, you're not allowed to daven barefoot, generally speaking. But somebody does come to your house and they've got muddy galoshes on. You don't let your kids come home on a day with a lot of rain. What do you tell them? Take your shoes off by the front door. You're not allowed to walk through the house with muddy shoes on. Somebody comes to shul on that same day. You should not, you have the rubber galoshes on top of your shoes, so you shouldn't be allowed to go into shul like that. Somebody comes into your house, and again, I guess it varies from house to house, right? You see people come into shul, and they hang their coats over the back of the chair, right? Does your wife let you do that? Okay, so you're all right. But a lot of places, what if it's a wet coat? What if you come in from the rain and your coat is dripping? She's going to let you put that on the couch and the chair in the living room?
She doesn't have to let me or not. I wouldn't even think of it.
Oh, she trained you well. So you see people come into shul.
Why get the credit?
So, your mother. She have a little nachas ruach.
Amen.
You come into shul with the dripping wet coat. You should hang it up in the coat rack. Right? And not bring it into shul and let it sit over your chair dripping, soaking wet. Because that's the kind of norm of, and you can niggle over, well, this, and that, no, and each community might have, right? But there's certain things that we would all agree on that wouldn't fly in anybody. If you were a guest in somebody's home, you wouldn't imagine walking into their home with muddy shoes on, right? Forget how you treat your own home. So this becomes the norm because, not because of Beit HaMikdash, but because of the norms of kavod in our own home. Is the synagogue is an extension of that. The Rav also explains this. This is why there are differences in the tefillot. There are different minhagim. If the blanks are davening for the amud, which almost always happens. On when Yontif and Shabbos coincide. So the Rav says, Shabbos and Yontif, this is a similar idea. Shabbos, we go to Beit HaMikdash. There's a din of Aliyah L'Regel. No, I'm sorry, Yontif. Yontif, there's a din of Aliyah L'Regel. We go to Beit HaMikdash.
This is where I heard this
thing. Shabbos, it's the opposite. Shalom Aleichem, Malachi Asher. God comes, Lichadodi Likraskala, Boichala, Boigala. Right? God comes to visit us in our homes and our synagogues. Right? And the differences in the liturgy between Shabbos and Yontif are a reflection of this. This is why, according to Minhag Ashkenaz, when Yontif and Shabbos coincide, you have a tension of values. And some. The straight Minhag Ashkenaz is basically to skip all of Kabbalah Shabbos, except for the Perek of Mizmor Shir L'Yom HaShabbos. Right? Why? Because on Yontif, even when it comes on Shabbos, we go to him. We don't need to welcome him in because we become the guests. Right? Other Minhagim, the Minhag Sfarad is to have a kind of abbreviated Kabbalat Shabbat. And according to that custom, the abbreviated Kabbalat Shabbat says only certain batim of the Lichadodi. Some
two,
are skipped.
First two and last two.
Because the ones in the middle talk about what?
About
the Mikdash. Right? And we don't want to remind ourselves too explicitly of the Mikdash on Yontif when we are ki'ilu going there, because it will remind us that it's not really there. Right? And it would cause us tsar. So this is how the Rav explained the development of these minhagim. But for the purposes of Mikdash Ma'at, ki beito ma beito akapandaria kapidinish arakika minalo kapidinish af beita knesset kapandaria huda asurikika minalo. Beita Mikdash was also to spit. People used to spit much more often than they do today. Right? And in Beit HaMikdash you wouldn't wear shoes. So this is in Beit HaMikdash you're allowed to wear shoes. Why? In Beit HaKnesset you're allowed to wear shoes. Why? Because in your home you wear shoes. In Beit HaKnesset you're allowed to spit. And they would have, you know, spittoons. Right? Why? Because people spit in their own homes. Right? You know, they would have... There's a halacha on Shabbat. Like if you spit on the dirt floor, like you know, just like rub it in, so like it wouldn't be too disgusting. So that's a problem on Shabbos. So okay. Eklomar v'ilu bebeit haMikdash afrikiku mna'al asiri. In Beit HaMikdash, spitting and wearing shoes were asir. Bebeit haMikdash shehu Beit Hashem va'anachnu orchim etzlo shayach yoter hadin shel mora haMikdash. Right, so the level of awe that we have to feel in Beit HaMikdash, right? You shouldn't feel completely at home because it's not your home. What? Aval beBeit HaKnesset shehu al pi din beitenu, the synagogue is our home. Hashem Yitbarach mitarech etzlenu lehivaed itanu velo mikre ela mikdash maat. That's why Beit HaKnesset is only a miniature mikdash and not the real thing. Mechar shegam hu makom hamiuchad levaed Hashem Yitbarach. Ach, lo noheg bo din ze de mikdashei tira'u b'chol tokfo. But the essential halacha of Beit HaMikdash, where you have to have awe for Beit HaMikdash, that doesn't apply in the synagogues in its full force. Right? Today there's still a din of mikdashei tira'u, of showing awe and reverence for Beit HaMikdash. Now this has to do with whether you can go there in the first place, a hotly debated topic. But even those that do not go to Beit HaMikdash, even those that don't go to Har HaBayit, according to the Rambam, davening towards Mizrach, or towards Tzafon, as we do, davening in the direction of Beit HaMikdash, is a kiyum of Mora HaMikdash, of showing reverence to Beit HaMikdash, that the center of Jewish worship is there, right? And here we are 20 miles south, or 2,000 miles to the west or the east, or wherever it is over the planet. Everybody davens facing that same compass point is a sign of reverence for the Beit HaMikdash as the center of worship. And as according to the Rambam, facing colloquial Mizrach is a Kiyum Diraisa. It's not ma'akev. That's the Mishnah in Brachos. That if you don't know which direction it is, or you know, there's some shuls that are not organized in this way. But facing Yerushalayim, and that's why, you know, some people are, you know, like nowadays, like, well, used to be you just had a general idea, like it was east someplace, right? That's
a.
Now you have the app. The exact. You know.
Yeah, but you line up with the app, and then all of a sudden it goes like that.
All the Siddur apps have they're two shitot. How to calculate which direction?
When I was in Hawaii, I didn't know if I should go to west or north.
You go down.
No, north.
Right through. Right through. That's right. Hawaii, Hankaka.
North is closest.
The good apps are the right setting to you.
Right.
Yeah,
so you know which one is
to choose. Oh, there's got what point is the exact opposite of Yerushalayim. It's probably someplace in the Pacific.
Yeah, it's right. Hawaii is the closest place to
No, like Bora Bora. It's got to be below the equator.
Right. 20 but degrees below the most settled area closest to it. Right?
So you're on a cruise ship. You're
this
on a
makes really big Hawaii's nowhere near. Never mind.
You're on the cruise ship that's exactly at the the polar opposite of your shalayim. You could dive in any direction.
Any direction.
And,
You know, Rebecca Vendis is about this whole thing. He was like a very, I guess, pre Zionist or whatever, but he says basically that the whole thing is like, he talks about in the introduction to the Siddur about how it's important to face whenever and all the other. He says, but this only applies if you're in Chutzlaretz and you are physically unable to be in, to make Aliyah, to be in Eretz Yisrael, you can go. It doesn't make a difference here. There's no point. The whole thing of point deciding to point to Eretz Yisrael, if you can actually get there, then
go.
You're making a joke of it.
Yeah, but you can't get there before Mincha.
No, but he said no. If you decide to remain in Chutzlaretz, and actually, what he amazingly says, he's writing this in the 1770s, I think. He says it's not like it was back in the old days when it was hard. Now it's easy to go
because it's nefesh b'nefesh. But people only have like a vague idea. I mean, this idea of davening, I mean, most of, you know, it's the idea of Mizrach, right? Right? In most of Europe, Mizrach is the wrong direction. Mizrach is you're davening to St. Petersburg or something. So, Agnon has a story about how the Jews settled in Buchach, you know, his town. In the time the story is set in the 16th century, it's in southern Poland. Today, it's in western Ukraine. But for now, when they bring Rabbi Nachman, they'll also bring Buchach back to Eretz Yisrael. So he says, how did the Jews first get to? So he tells this legend, which has no real historical basis, that they came from Germany. And they like had this idea they were going to go up to Eretz Yisrael, which is completely anachronistic. There were no mass aliyot in the 1600s from Germany, so they didn't know where Eretz is. You know, to them, Eretz Yisrael was just this kind of abstract idea. So they knew it was in the east because they used to dive into the east. So they headed east. They headed due east until what happened? The winter showed up and they got buried underneath 20 feet of snow. So they couldn't keep going and they got stuck there. And that's how they. Ended up in this. That's how they ended up in this town. So anyway, just let's finish at least this paragraph. V'lo miyem mekdesha miachar shegam hu makom di miuchad levarei mashenivah ach lo noheg bo din shel mekdesha tiro b'chol tokfo miachar she sof kol sof enenu beit Hashem ela beitenu. So the full force of reverence for the mikdash does not apply in the synagogue because it's not after all his mikdash; it's our home. V'halacha rak doreshet shekol ha-hanagash adam ragil hakpid shelo te'aseh b'toch beito asura hi b'beit ha-kneset. Anything that a normal person wouldn't do in his own home, walk around with muddy shoes, for example, you can't do that in the synagogue. Mikoach hachkra d'miktashai tirou. Now, when you don't walk around in muddy shoes or you don't hang your wet coat off the shul chair in the synagogue, right, because of it would be improper or rude or kapandaria in Beit HaKnesset. That's a kiyum of Mikdash Haytiro also, right? But not everything that applies in Beit HaMikdash under the category of Mikdash Haytiro applies in Beit HaKnesset because of Mikdash Haytiro. All right, we'll finish this. We'll continue this next week.